Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This morning, a Russian drone strike on a port in southern Ukraine damaged vital facilities used to export grain. And Ukraine says more than 10 Russian drones targeted Kyiv. Now, this comes the day after drones struck a skyscraper in Moscow for the second time in 48 hours.
So now the hits are coming inside Russia, and Ukraine isn't denying or confirming, but these are drone strikes. It's supposed to rattle the people and let them know what's really going on in the war. Will it be successful? Joining me now in studio, Mikhail Zeiger, the Russian journalist and author of a new book, War and Punishment, Putin, Zelensky, and the Path to Russia's Invasion of Ukraine. Mikhail, welcome. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the book. Why did you leave Russia?
Oh, I couldn't stay after the beginning
war starts,
of the war.
You're out.
Yeah, I left on the third day, and, you know, first it was some kind of moral obligation to fight, to start fighting against it. I couldn't fight against the war while staying in Russia as a writer, as a journalist, because, you know, military censorship was introduced in Russia on the third day of the war. So most of journalists had to leave.
What would happen to you if you stood there and wrote the real situation?
If I just called this war a war, I would face from 5 to 7 years in jail.
What do they call it?
Special military operation.
And here's the reason why they're fighting. Listen to Vladimir Putin.
We are fighting with Nazis. The nationalist detachments, which include foreign fighters, including from the Middle East, use peaceful citizens as a human shield.
So we're fighting Nazis, human citizens, as a human shield. Well, when you bomb schools, you might have human beings in them.
Yeah, you know, that's the rhetorics he was using right in the beginning. Actually, by now, propaganda has become much more cynical. They are not even denying that this war is brutal aggression. They just explain that there shouldn't be any monopoly for violence. They usually say that, okay, if the United States could invade Iraq, we should have the right to invade Ukraine. That's the way how Putin thinks.
So why do you think that if he knew how this would come out, he still would have done it?
No, he didn't know, obviously.
He thought he'd have a quick win.
Yes, absolutely. He was sure that in 3 days, Kyiv would surrender and Ukrainians would greet Russian soldiers with flowers. But he was obviously misled by his people.
Thought Zelensky was weak.
Yeah, he was quite sure that Zelensky was weak. He was absolutely sure that all the global leaders are weaker than he was, because he thinks that he is the only capable global leader.
So he has Nord Stream 2 done. Joe Biden signs off on it. He has Nord Stream 1. It would have been permanently giving them control of the energy system for all Europe. You know, Trump couldn't get through to him. If you're looking for the sound, right there on the corner. Yeah. So this is done. Didn't he know that he was jeopardizing Western trade in doing this, that this would be ultimately there would be some type of response? And now there's no Nord Stream 1 and no Nord Stream 2. That's not a big deal to him?
You know, it's not a big deal because in the beginning he was sure that the West cannot do without Russian oil and gas. And he seems to be right, because until now, Russia manages to export its natural resources now via third parties, and Europeans are still buying Russian oil and gas, not directly via Turkey
or
Kazakhstan, like European Union. It doesn't go directly from Russia, but actually out of all five gas pipelines that existed and were working before the war, the main pipeline that goes through Ukraine is still functioning. And actually Poland is buying that natural gas.
I had no idea about that. What pipeline would that be?
The pipeline that goes
from
Russia to Ukraine and then to Poland.
That's incredible. So right now with this counterinsurgency happening, what's the feeling in Russia as drones begin to hit major cities?
You know, that's interesting because for many months, most Muscovites were trying to pretend that nothing was happening. That's the way how people try to escape that reality. They try to pretend that business is usually still possible. Nothing is happening. War is very far, and a lot of people are feeling helpless. I don't believe that majority of Russians support this war. They just think that they can do anything about that, and they don't see that war.
But now they see it.
Now they see it. Yeah.
What about the Crimea Bridge hit twice?
Yeah, Crimea Bridge is very far. I'm really surprised that a lot of Russians are still going for their summer vacations in Crimea now through occupied territories of Ukraine.
So now we understand that Russia needs soldiers. So here is here's some of the problem. For example, who is this talking right now, Eric? It says, okay, never mind. So right now they need soldiers. What are they doing? Because so many people have left rather than serve.
Yes, but you know, there are several very depressive regions of Russia, and they are. Looking for volunteers in those depressive, distant regions in Siberia, for example, and they are paying a lot. And they managed to create the system when they are paying like 20 times as much as the average salary in a region. And people are volunteering. They are ready to die in exchange for a big sum of money paid to their families.
So now NATO has been unified. It's been expanded. Finland mm-hmm. and Sweden.
Yeah.
What do you think really, Norway and Finland?
Sweden and Finland.
So what do you think that Vladimir Putin thinks about this?
I think that his so-called obsession with NATO is a big lie. He's not frightened of NATO. That's his internal propaganda. He uses that myth of Russia as a besieged fortress and myth of the eternal fight between Russia and NATO just to remain in power. That's the only way how he can persuade a big part of the population that he is the only guarantor of the peace, of the stability, and so on.
So some people who are against and trying to rationalize Russia's decision have said, well, we're the ones who broke our word. That when Gorbachev made a deal with Reagan and Bush, he said, listen, you could have Germany. I don't want to see NATO in any of these Eastern Bloc countries. I don't want to see them become NATO nations. Well, Clinton went ahead and said, Poland, you can do it. And all the Baltics are there. And we know about the nations of Hungary. They are NATO nations. So does Putin have a legitimate complaint?
You know, when Putin has just become a president, he openly proposed Russia to join NATO, and he asked George W. Bush to greet him. He wanted Russia to be part of NATO. He was discussing it with that time NATO Secretary General Lord Robertson from Britain. So he was not hostile against NATO from the beginning, and the idea of Russia as a part of NATO didn't seem to be horrible for him, but he wanted to be really respected. He wanted to be important. He wanted Russia to be a superpower, even inside NATO. And he couldn't achieve that. He couldn't achieve that level of personal importance in the eyes of George W. Bush. And that was the beginning of his paranoia. And then Orange Revolution started in Ukraine, and he has become even more paranoid. He started thinking that Americans want to topple him. And he was becoming more and more paranoid all of those years.
Doing that.
Yes, he's got his personal feud against Hillary Clinton because of the huge protest rallies in Russia in 2011, 2012, which were not organized by Hillary Clinton. She could not do that, but he thought that it was State Department who organized it, and he was not exactly right.
And by the way, my guess is Mikhail Zigar.
Yeah.
Zigar, he's a Russian journalist and author of a new book, War and Punishment. So he's bringing us inside Russia. So the revolution, the Green Revolution inside Ukraine, was it the Green?
Orange.
I know Senator McCain was there supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seems that Ukraine wants to be West. They want to be part of the European Union.
That's
obviously
true.
Even before the invasion, dying to be part of NATO. NATO was like, you're not ready yet. And plus, they thought that would be a problem for Russia because Russia always thought, I guess, to a degree that they should be closer to them. Ukraine has a different mindset than Vladimir Putin understands. Am I
absolutely,
correct?
Absolutely. In my book, I write a lot about the differences between Russians and Ukrainians, different history, different culture, different language, although Putin truly believes that Russians and Ukrainians are the same people. And he has done a huge job alienating Ukrainians. He was pushing so hard in 2004 to install pro-Russian candidate Yanukovych as the new president, and that was worse than a mistake.
They hated him.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Ukrainians hated him.
Absolutely, absolutely.
They kicked him out.
Yes, absolutely.
They had an election. He lost. He was gone. He goes into Russia,
mm-hmm.
And then Russia does what?
And then Russia occupied Crimea. Yeah. Putin has a lot of prejudice against Ukrainians, partially because of his background as a KGB officer, partially because of his old-time friends who were children of very well-known Soviet academicians, Soviet historians, who were specializing on two things, on the Cold War and American conspiracy against Russia, against Soviet Union. And the second one, the father of his closest friend, Yuri Kovalchuk, was specializing on history of Crimea. So Putin is one of the few people in Russia who believes that Crimea is the symbol of Russian statehood. That's very rare.
Does he believe that Russian speakers want to be in Russia? Like, for example, the Russian speakers in Ukraine. In the Donbass region, in Odessa. Evidently, there's mm-hmm. some in Odessa. They speak Russian. Now they're going to go.
Even in Kyiv. Yeah.
In Kyiv. So the fact that they speak Russia, did he legitimately misinterpret their allegiance to Russia as opposed to their country?
Yeah, he really doesn't understand that during the last 30 years, a lot of new generations grew up in Ukraine, and those people do not consider themselves to be Russian colony. They do not consider themselves to be part of Russia. They are Ukrainians, even though they're speaking Russian or Ukrainian. They have absolutely different mentality. They want to be part of the Western world. They want to be part of the democratic world, and they don't want to serve to Vladimir Putin.
Last question for you. When we watch Prigozhin and Wagner get within a couple hundred miles of Moscow, Prigozhin gets a deal, gets a base reportedly in Belarus. The Wagner group reports there's some video out. What's happened to him since? What happens to the Wagner group? How much is the war effort hurt by them not participating in it for Russia?
I don't think that it would cause any real troubles for Russian troops because, the front line is rather stable and Russian army can do now without Prigozhin and without Wagner Group. But it's really weird what has happened to him and why he's not in Belarus, for example, because according to my sources, he spends a lot of time not in Belarus, but in St. Petersburg in his hometown.
He's alive.
He's alive and he's at home in President Putin's hometown. And he's still trying to maintain his business.
Because he didn't want to overthrow Vladimir Putin, you're saying?
Yeah, that's important. That's important because he personally remains loyal to President Putin.
Just hates the generals around him.
He hates the system, the bureaucracy, the army, but he's still Putin's man.
How does this end?
I hope, and I think, according to many of my sources, another coup is possible. So Putin's system is not that stable as it seemed to be a year ago.
How does the war end?
Only after he's gone, unfortunately.
He will never stop.
He will never
will
stop.
Will he begin to lose? Medvedev says if he begins to lose, they're going to start thinking about nuclear weapons.
No, he doesn't. He won't use it because he had warning from the Chinese who don't want him to start a nuclear war and won't let him do that. But he doesn't need the truce. He doesn't need the peace. He wants to continue this war. Even if it's a stalemate, that's okay for him. A frozen conflict is okay for him because he is the president of the war. The only way for him to remain in power in Russia, to hold the power, is to be the war leader.
And the Ukraine, the grain deal?
He hates the grain deal, yeah.
So he's going to stop it.
He's going to stop it, yeah.
He's not going to feel pressure from Turkey and others with starving people in Africa. He just met with all these African leaders. He's not going to feel pressure.
He wants to be a respected global leader, as he perceives it. He wants to make deals directly with Africans. He wants to be some kind of the leader of the USSR who can feel influential in Africa, in Asia, in different regions of the world, not only in Ukraine.
Why does he like Trump?
I think that he believes, and I think that he's wrong. He believes that once Trump is back in the White House, he would stop support of Ukraine. And I personally think that would be a mistake for the United States, because Ukraine is the ally, is a very important country, is a truly democratic nation that doesn't see itself to be part of Russia. And I think that Putin is wrong in his perception of American position towards Ukraine.
I'm impressed with Zelensky. Are you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. Hey, pick up Mikhail Zeiger's book. He's a Russian journalist, a brave guy, author of a new book, War and Punishment, Putin, Zelensky, and the Path to Russia's Invasion of Ukraine. And Mikhail, you're also known as a badass in war. So I appreciate you bringing that here.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for having me.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.